Good morning, everyone. Again, my name is Clark Neely. I'm a PhD student at Texas A&M, and today I'd like to talk to you about looking at legume contributions to soil as well as the yield of high biomass sorghum cropping systems. So our overall objective in this study was to look at increasing sustainability in high biomass sorghum production systems by incorporating legumes into the cropping system. As many of you know, in recent years there's been a big push for decreasing this country's dependency on foreign oil. And one option, we're looking at all possible options, and one of those would be making cellulosic bioethanol. More specifically, we've been looking at high biomass sorghum. It's shown a lot of genetic potential, and it's been bred specifically for high biomass yields and fermentability. And two points I'd like to look at here. Also, many of you know that using legumes in cropping systems has the benefit of adding fixed nitrogen to the system. You don't have to apply as much chemical fertilizer. So the first point there, we wanted to look at cool season legume cover crops, which we were hoping would add sufficient nitrogen to the soil that we could increase or maintain sorghum yields at decreased fertilizer rates. And then also we wanted to look at not only cool season, but we wanted to look at warm season legumes and whether they could do the same thing if we intercropped them as either an intercrop or green manure. And lastly, we wanted to look at the effects not only on the sorghum, but also on the effect these legumes would have on the soil as well. We looked at soil organic carbon and nitrogen. So the study took place at the Texas AgriLife Research and Extension Center in Overton, which is northeast Texas, located in the Piney Woods vegetative zone. It was conducted on a Lilbert loamy fine sand, which typically runs about 1% organic matter or less. And the pH was 6 to 6.5. This is because we limed it. Typically, these soils are very acidic, and they run from anywhere from like 3.8 to 5.8. I threw this slide in here to show you some of the weather patterns we were dealing with in Texas the last 2 years. A lot of you may have heard on the news how dry it's been down here. You can see the green bars and the green lines represent average precipitation and temperature. You can see the red and blue lines are well above the green line for the temperature, and for the rainfall in 2010, we had close to average, but more importantly, it kind of all came in the first part of the summer, and we were really dry in the second half, and in 2011, we just really had no rainfall, hardly. So this was set up in a split plot design. The main plot was cover crop. We then split that into subplots using cropping rotation. The treatments included a sole crop of sorghum, intercrop, sorghum cowpea, and a green manure treatment. And then we further split that down. Our subplots were assigned three different nitrogen rates of 0, 45, and 90 kilograms. Plots were 3 by 3 meters in dimension. And the target crop we looked at was ES5200 for the sorghum. That's a breeding line that was developed by Dr. Rooney at Texas A&M. Our cover crop was the Dixie Crimson Clover, and then we used iron and clay cowpea for our intercrop and green manure treatment. This picture is showing you what our cover crop treatment looked like. The Crimson Clover is on your right, and the fallow is on the left, so that gives you a good idea what the soil looks like at the site. And this shows you our different cropping rotation treatments in 2010. The sole crop sorghum's on your right, the cowpea green manure is in the middle, and the intercrop cowpea sorghum is on the left. This was taken in August, and this was taken in 2011. Does anyone notice the difference here? intercrop did very poorly on the right, and we haven't finished processing the data here, but we did take some plant heights that we've looked at, and there was a significant increase in plant height. And just by looking at it with the green manure, you can see that those plants are a little greener in relation to the other treatments. So the green manure had beneficial impacts on the following year. And again, this just hits home the difference between the 2 years. On the left-hand side, our technician there is holding a ruler. It's measuring 8 feet height on the sorghum versus 2011. Those plants are 2 to 3 feet in height. And this is what the cowpea should look like on a somewhat normal year. During the first month and a half to 2 months of their growth, they stay relatively bushy. Then they begin to vine out. And once they do that, they're very good at taking advantage of any structure there. They're very good at vining and climbing up the stalks and competing for light. So that, we can move on to results. Before I move on, I want to mention a lot of these results are just based on the first year of the study in 2010. We have a handful of 2011 results. But in 2010, we got a little over 2 metric tons per hectare of dry matter, above ground dry matter for the clover. We had just over half of that in 2011, and roughly a third to a half of the above ground biomass was seen underground with the roots. We did not see an increase in yield based on the crimson clover. We actually saw a slight decrease in the soil nitrogen and carbon in March, right before we plowed it under. It was only in the range of 7 to 9%, and actually by the end of the year, that had reduced down to like 1 or 2%, so really pretty negligible impact. And then we also looked in 2011 to see if any of the treatments had impacted the cover crop, and we didn't see any differences there either, above or below ground. So taking a look at the warm season legumes, when we intercropped cowpea with the sorghum, we had the cowpea proved very, very competitive, and we saw a 59% decrease in the sorghum biomass. We went all the way from 17 metric tons down to a little over 7. That's a pretty drastic reduction. We did not see any difference on the sorghum nitrogen content. And looking at the cowpea, we did see a reduction in the cowpea stand, but we also saw an increase in cowpea height, and ended up they canceled each other out, and we really didn't see any change in the cowpea biomass production. As for the green manure, these graphs do a really good job of comparing it to the other treatments that we had. The biggest difference here, in 2011, you can see the heights were much shorter due to the moisture limitations that we had. But the different colors, which correspond to the different cropping rotation treatments we had, segregate out pretty nicely. You can see the green line in 2011. The green manure was significantly higher than the sole crop sorghum, which is the blue line, and that was significantly higher than the intercrop sorghum. Taking a look at our total biomass yields, you can see across all the nitrogen rates that the sole crop sorghum yielded more total biomass than the intercropped treatment. And that includes not only the sorghum, but also the cowpea. So even by adding the cowpea to the above ground biomass, it had such a drastic reduction in the sorghum biomass that even the two together didn't equal the sole sorghum. And I should point out on the previous slide, there was no change in yield based on nitrogen treatments. Okay, so taking a look then at the soil organic carbon and nitrogen, I threw these up here basically just to show you some trends that we thought maybe we were seeing. There weren't any statistical differences based on the first year. The first thing I wanted to point out was that we saw a general decrease in carbon and nitrogen. I think that might be attributed to annual cycles. After the summer with the warmer temperatures, I think you tend to see maybe a slight reduction due to the microbial activity and mineralization of that carbon. The other thing was the carbon and nitrogen were very much correlated to each other, but you would expect to see that as well. One thing that we did see that was kind of interesting, if you look at the 15 to 30 centimeter depth, so the two bottom charts, it looked like the sorghum cowpea intercrop at the lower nitrogen rates tended to minimize the decrease or stay fairly flatline throughout the year. So maybe that was buffering some loss there. But we'll continue to monitor this over several years and see if that trend continues or if any other trends arise. This table, I wanted to put this table in to show you some of the contributions we were getting from each of these crops in the rotation. You can see in the red, we were getting close to 1,000 kilograms per hectare of carbon that was contributed by the crimson clover. In the green, you can see that the cowpea under the green manure was contributing between 2,600 and 2,700 kilograms of carbon. Under the intercrop, it was only contributing 80 because we were only counting the roots that were being left behind because the above ground was being removed with the sorghum, so that was being taken off site. But in general, you can see if you look at the bottom total balance, the sole crop was contributing actually more than the intercrop, and the green manure in the first year was contributing a lot more than that, almost tenfold. And then this table shows you the same trends, only with nitrogen other than carbon. You can see the sorghum, when we removed the above-ground biomass, removed about 135 kilograms. When we intercropped the cowpea, actually we saw a reduction in the nitrogen being removed simply because we saw a reduction in the biomass production. And then with the cowpea by itself, when it was plowed under, was contributing about 135 kilograms to the system. And then the same trends hold true for the other side of that with the cover crop. Only add another 50 kilograms on top of that that the clover was contributing. So in conclusion, the sole crop sorghum outperformed the intercrop sorghum because the cowpeas were so competitive in this environment, specifically because of the dry conditions. The green manure in the second year enhanced sorghum performance over the sole crop sorghum, but we did not see any impacts from the crimson clover cover crop. And the soil nitrogen and carbon after the first year showed little or no change, which isn't really all that unexpected. If you look at the literature, you know it takes time to build that the nitrogen and carbon in the soil. And also, we didn't see any changes in the nitrogen fertilizer rates, and that was simply because moisture was more limiting than the nitrogen was. And that may be masking some other treatment effects that we weren't seeing in this study. So hopefully next year and the year after we have a little bit more moisture, maybe we'll get some different results. So with that, I'd like to acknowledge the Texas AgriLife Research Bioenergy Initiatives Program, which provided partial funding for this project, and thank you to all the technicians and field help that I had. And also, I just remember I didn't acknowledge my co-authors, so I'd like at this time to acknowledge Drs. Monty Roquette, Gerald Smith, William Rooney, Christine Morgan, and Frank Hans for their help. So, thank you. Take any questions.
Thank you very much, Clark. Any questions? Questions or comments?
Yes, sir. It seems like you saw no effects of nitrogen throughout the study. Obviously, in the dry year, that's understandable. Any other thoughts about that?
Normally sorghum requires a fair bit of nitrogen put on it, and that's why it was important to point out that we didn't see a nitrogen response. And I think that was because it had enough nitrogen to produce the biomass for the amount of moisture that it had. So if you add more moisture on there, we would not only see a response to the chemical fertilizer we put on, but hopefully the cover crop and the green manure, we'd see more benefits from that as well. Does that answer your question? Or?
Any other questions?
Okay, one more.
Yeah.
So that green manure crop, you actually sacrifice a year of...
Yes. Yeah, that's the downfall of that. But on the other hand, you don't have the competition that you would with the intercrop.
I've got one, Clark. Mm-hmm. With an anticipated dry year coming up, you just obviously went through one. Do you plan on changing anything within your experimental design, or how are you going to...
I think for now we're just going to keep it the same to continue through. If we were to repeat this study, I would and we included an intercrop, I would consider a different variety of cowpea, if not a different species altogether that's not as competitive. There's plenty of cowpea varieties out there that are determinant, or they don't vine out and stay bushy. But you still run into that issue with the moisture if it's limiting with it being competitive.
Any other questions? All right, thank you very much, Clark.
Thanks.